Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. What is the purpose of life? Why, what are we here for? And how do we gain personal fulfillment? According to the Indian spiritual tradition, the reason that we're here is to experience our oneness with God, to attain, whether you say moksha, whether you say liberation, whether you say nirvana, whether you say freedom, whatever words we use, they're all describing the same experience. And that's the point. But it comes from an awareness of who we are. And so what we're taught is that, as I was speaking last night about, we are the soul. We have all of this stuff which is not self. The body, all of our relationships, all of our possessions, all of our history, all of our emotions. It comes with our body, but not of the soul, not of the self. And so the body is what is the vehicle, you can say, for the soul, for the self, on this part of the journey to its ultimate enlightenment. So if you wanted to drive, say, from here to Paris, and you got in your car here, you would drive, and you would drive as far as your car could take you. And if the car broke, you'd get a new car. Because ultimately, you know, I've got to get to Paris. So as many cars as it takes you, depending on the quality of the car, but also even more importantly, depending on how you treat the car. Drive at the speed limit. Stay in your lane. Don't, you know, run over things, don't drive recklessly, your car is going to last. Drive recklessly, drive at high speeds, you're going to have accidents. Parts of the car will stop working or fall off. You'll have to get new cars sooner rather than later. But the point is, you're going to Paris. That's your ultimate destination. And you're going to reach there. Whether you reach there in one car, or whether you reach there in 20 cars. That's the role that the body plays for the soul or the self. Is we need it, the same way that if I want to go to Paris, I need a car or some vehicle in which I can get there. We need the body because the body is, as I said last night, the medium of our consciousness. However, the body is not the self, nor is anything we put on it, nor is anything it earns, nor is anything that happens to it, nor is any place it goes. Who we are is the soul or the self. So that's what the purpose of life is to actually not just learn it because I'm saying it or because you read it somewhere, but to actually experience the self not as the body, not as the relationships, not as the culture, not as the history. When most of us close our eyes and think about ourself, this voice of judgment comes in. You're stupid, you're ugly, you're useless, you shouldn't have said that, you shouldn't have done this, or you're a victim, everybody else is horrible, look what they did to you. That's the type of stuff that comes in most of our minds when we close our eyes and we look at the self. Or just, oh my God, my back hurts. Oh my God, I ate too much, my stomach hurts. Oh my God, it's hot tonight. That's the stuff that comes to us. So when we have been talking about peeling back layers, it's an analogy, it's a term, it's a way to think about it, to get from the you ate too much and you're stupid and you're ugly and you're the victim to actually who you are. But you could use other analogies. You could think about looking through a window that's clouded, and you can't really quite see onto the other side, but on the other side is you. So that window, you're looking in at the self. And what we're trying to do is clean that window. But the point is that the purpose of your life, as the question asked, is to have that experience. To actually be able to experience, me. Not with any identity, not with any personality, not in the clothes I'm wearing, not in what's going on with my body. I recognize all that stuff. Spirituality is not about denouncing that. It's not that we ignore the body. As I said, ideally, you're going to get to Paris in one car. It's going to be a much smoother trip. Ideally, you're going to attain enlightenment in this life, in this body. Use it well. It can happen easily. Paris, you've actually got to cross a certain number of kilometers. There's no shortcut. You know, we don't have the magic that in the show when I was growing up, they used to have with the witch, and she would, you know, rub her nose and she could make anything happen. You can't do that. You can't be in Paris. You've actually got to get in the car and drive and get there. But for awakening, there's no set kilometers or time, because it's us. It's self. We're just going back to the self. It's with you right here, right now. Paris is not. You'd have to literally stand up, walk out of this room, get yourself to Delhi, get in some kind of vehicle, and move to Paris. But for awakening, it's with you right here, right now, in this room, on this carpet, or in these chairs, where you're sitting. There is nothing outside that you're going to get that's going to make that possible. It's just you. So that's the purpose of life. What are we here for? Same thing. How do we gain personal fulfillment? We attain fulfillment by realizing what it is that fulfills us. And the beautiful thing is, all of us have had the experience, I hope, at some point in your life of being really deeply fulfilled. Feeling really full in that moment. A moment in which you feel like, if nothing ever changes, if I never achieve anything else, if I never get anything else, if I never do anything else, right here. This is just great. So we've had those experiences, and if we look back on them, or if you've never had one, don't worry, it'll come. But what we know about them is they don't come with external success, We may feel satisfied with ourselves. We're proud of ourselves. It's great. Nothing wrong with patting yourself on the back for getting a degree after years in school or achieving a hard-earned goal. But that's not the deep fulfillment. If that were the deep fulfillment, then every Hollywood and Bollywood actor and actress, every singer, every billionaire, every tenured professor, every Miss Universe would be models of joy, of happiness, of peace. And they're not. Most of them, sadly, are miserable. Large percentage of them are alcoholics or drug addicts or struggle with eating disorders or have been divorced many times because they can't maintain a relationship. So there's no connection between that which I'm achieving on the outside and a sense of fulfillment on the inside. We think there will be. We think if I can just get this done. And yeah, there's a little bit of a sense of, whew, all right, graduated high school, all right, graduated college, all right, passed that exam, all right, finally did this report. But it's fleeting. It's fleeting, then it's something else. And the real fulfillment comes when we actually moving from who we know we are able to use that in the world. And now here's the caveat, though, that's really important. It's not about what you do. Because when we get in touch with who we are, you're not going to hear a voice. Your intuition is not going to rise up from within you and say, thou shalt be CEO of a company. And then you know which direction to go in. It's not going to well up and say, thou shalt achieve this or become that or get this job or have that career. That's not what the voices give us. What the voices give us is who we are. And then once we know who we are, we're able to feel which places, which things are in alignment with who we are. And when we're connected with who we are, then we become literally a source. Not just are we fulfilled, are we happy, but we literally become a source for others. And in us living as who we are, we actually create space for other people. Because if I'm living as an object, if I'm living just as this body, then when I look at you, I see you just as a body. I'm going to see you just as an object. And so you, on a deep intuitive level, on an energetic level, you're going to respond to me as an object. You're going to respond to me as a body. And we're going to have that type of relationship. But if instead I see myself, I'm living within myself as soul, as consciousness, as love, then I'm able to see that in you. And when I look at you, instead of looking at you as object, instead of looking at you as body, I look at you as soul. And what it does is it creates space. Because then you can step into your soulness. Because you know that I see it already. And then we become a gift. Whatever our career may be, whatever our job may be, whatever we're doing, whatever duty it is, but we become a gift to people around us. Because we create that space for them too to get out of being an object. But as long as we are interacting with others as objects, then we're keeping them stuck. So when we get fulfilled, when we access that well within, What you find also is you've got way more energy. Way more energy. Because suddenly you're not moving from a place of playing a role. You're moving from a place of truth. You've got way more energy and you're way more effective. Because that which you're doing, and again, it's not so much the things, it's the way you're doing them, are in flow. There's that beautiful story of the enlightened monk in the village and a traveler, a seeker, came upon him. He had heard about him. He was searching him out, and he comes upon him in his house. And the monk is chopping wood in the backyard. And the seeker says, "What are you doing?" And the monk says, "Oh, I'm chopping wood so I can make a fire." And the seeker says, "Oh," because of course that's not really what you expect like enlightened masters to be doing. You know, you expect that you're going to arrive and they're just going to be sitting in meditation and beaming light at you. And here was this monk chopping wood, and then he was going to make a fire. And he said, "And then I'll be able to cook my dinner." And the seeker said, "Oh," you could tell he was kind of disappointed, like this wasn't what he had expected of enlightenment. And he said to the master, "Well, so what did you do before you were enlightened?" And he said, "Oh, well, I used to chop wood and make a fire and cook dinner." And the seeker said, "Well, so what's the difference? Like, why bother being enlightened? I mean, if you were already chopping wood and having to make your own fire and cook your own dinner, so what's the point? Like, what have you gained?" And the monk said, "The chopper of the wood, the maker of the fire, the cook of the dinner has changed. And so everything has changed." And that's what happens. And it's not just when you get enlightenment, it's as you're connected with the self. When you're deeply connected with the self, with the soul, you still do the same things. It's not like you're going to start flying around on magic carpets or, you know, having a magic wand and just going around and, you know, tapping people or, you know, whatnot with your wand. I remember actually a quick digression when I was at the UN in June for the International Yoga Day, walking out of the program. We'd had this beautiful program, but walking out of it, there was a woman who had come and who stops me, and she hands me this very pink, fuzzy thing. And she hands it to me and she says, "Take this, you'll be able to use it." And I said, "What is it?" And she said, "It's an aura cleanser." So I smiled and I had a, you know, little thank you. And I took my pink fuzzy aura cleanser and went on my way. But I share the story with you because that's not exactly how it works. It's not about magic wands. It's not about fuzzy pipe cleaners, you know, that have been bent into a certain shape. Who we are is a much more powerful tool than that. Who we are has all the energy. You don't need the wand. You don't need the pipe cleaner bent into different shapes and with, you know, fuzz on it. When we're connected, when we know who we are, life flows and we become more effective, more efficient, because we're in flow. So whatever we're doing, whether it's chopping wood, making fires, cooking dinners, filing papers, from the smallest things to the biggest things, the doer has changed. And that's where all the difference is.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
We tend to see divinity very easily in things that feel nice.
Things are beautiful, or according to whatever our perception of something that's divine is, we see them as divine. Things aren't so nice. And how can we see divinity in all of that? Well, for me, personally, the greatest way to do that is to just keep reconnecting to nature, because I'm so firm in my faith of the divine having created nature and nature being sort of the most perfect example that doesn't have the ego that makes it go astray, that doesn't have the desires that make it go astray, that doesn't have the fears that make it go astray. You know, the oak tree that never says, forget it, if I can't get some, you know, apples on these branches, I'm going to, you know, stop being a tree. The oak tree understands, I'm an oak tree, I'm not going to produce apples. So for me, nature is just the model of how creation should be. And so in nature, when we look at nature, we realize there's just as much death as there is life. There's just as much drying up as there is lushness. You know, and my favorite example, of course, is the cycle of it, where you've got the green tree with beautiful green leaves that then turn orange and red and brown in the autumn. They become dry, and ultimately they actually fall down. The tree is bare. The snow comes, it packs down those dry leaves that we thought were dead. And those dead, dry leaves become actually the fertile soil for what blossoms in spring. And it just really, really, for me, makes us know God has no preference. Because, of course, if God wanted trees to be green all year, God would make trees green all year. And if God wanted every tree to give apples, every tree would give apples. And if God wanted, you know, there never to be a dry season or a hot season, there wouldn't be dry seasons and hot seasons. We've got, in America, we talk about four seasons. Here, they talk about six seasons. But we all agree that there's seasons. Even in places, I lived in Ecuador for a year, which is right on the equator, and you don't get very much seasonal variation during the year, but you get it all in one day. Literally, the day would start, it was freezing cold. You'd get bright sunlight, hot days, you'd get some rain. We used to say, well, we got all four seasons in the day. And so when you realize that, when we're able to really see the divinity in leaves that are drying and getting shriveled and falling down, and see the divinity in the winter time,
See the divinity in the rain the same that we can see the divinity in the sun. See the divinity in a cloudy day the same as in a non-cloudy day. It starts to help us see how there really is no preference. No preference for life over death. No preference for lushness over dryness. No preference even for health. I mean, there, if you study botany, what you know is that, you know, they get all kinds of diseases in trees that actually wipe out entire populations. That's not because the trees did something wrong, and in many cases, not even because humans went in and did something wrong. I mean, we're doing enough that's wrong to the trees, but a lot of this is just nature. It just happens. There's, you know, certain types of bugs that grow certain ways that different animals grow and actually end up suffocating the tree and killing the, you know, all of this takes place in nature. And the question as well, or even you look at the animals and you look at one animal eating another animal, killing another animal to eat it. Well, for most of us, violence isn't very divine. Murder certainly isn't divine. But when you see it happen in nature, we're like, wow, all right. Okay. So murder becomes divine. And so tearing up bloody flesh with the teeth becomes, because this is nature. And so for me, on a deep level, that's the easiest way to do it, is to really, really just over-remember how nature works, but also to remember that seeing the divine in everyone doesn't mean seeing the divine in every situation. An enlightened being could see the divine even in someone like Hitler. I can't do it, but I'm sure that, you know, the enlightened masters can. I'm sure Pujaswamiji could. But that doesn't mean that the Holocaust was divine. It doesn't mean that there's any divinity in what he did. And that's also a really important distinction, is when we talk about seeing the divine everywhere, it doesn't mean these starving people, oh, well, that's a really divine situation. No, it's not. It's a horrendous situation. The people who are starving are divine. And what can we do to serve them? Because unlike nature, we've actually created their problem. There actually are enough resources. There is enough food. There is enough water. There are enough of all of our resources to provide for everyone on Earth. So if people are suffering due to lack, we actually have created that. And so it becomes our responsibility to fix it. So the divinity in the situations, it's, you know, you could look at a particular political leader, for example, not to be named, and say, well, okay, so I'm yes, the core of this leader must be divine because all of creation is divine. But that doesn't mean what he's doing is divine. Doesn't mean that we support the decisions. Doesn't mean we shouldn't rally against decisions that are being made. And so I would say, if you can keep those two things in mind, the aspect of nature and all four seasons and everything being divine, and that just because the living beings are all divine doesn't mean that we all always act in divine ways. I mean, if I'm not connected to my soul, and I'm connected instead to my body and to my mind and to my history and my identity and all of that, and I act out of that, out of my ego, and my ego makes me act, whether it's in anger, whether it's in greed, whether it's in jealousy, whether it's in ignorance, whatever it is, Well, nobody's saying that action is divine. It's just saying I'm divine. But since I'm not in touch with the divinity of myself, and in my ignorance, I think I am this body, that I am my emotions, I act based on that, and I do things that are wrong. And then, of course, I suffer the karma of that, and the whole cycle begins. But if you try to see the divine in everything that happens, you're going to drive yourself crazy. Yeah, really. I mean, it's how to see the divine in all of the beings, even when they're engaged in behaviors that are so clearly not divine. Can we still see the divine being that's in there and just not being connected to by the conscious mind? It is, it's really hard. But the good news of that is it makes 24 hours a day our spiritual practice. Then it's not just a matter of how much time do I have to sit in meditation or how much time do I have to sit and pray. Then I can actually stand up off my cushion, stand up out of my mandir, and not feel like I'm leaving my spiritual practice behind. It becomes literally, if my goal becomes, can I see the divine in all? Well, and the first really beautiful aspect also of that is, our eye that sees the divine, our third eye, has to be open in order for us to see the divine anywhere. Seeing the divine in the flowing Ganga, seeing the divine in a gorgeous sunset, seeing the divine in the eyes of one you love and who loves you back and is looking at you with love, it's relatively easy. The eye doesn't have to be open super wide. But as we start to see the divine in more, that eye has to open more and more and more. And so it actually becomes a really beautiful spiritual practice, because as you're challenging yourself, that eye is getting open more and more, which of course ends up benefiting us in so many ways. But yeah, it is really hard. The English translation of sadhana is spiritual practice, to remind us, I think, that it's a practice. I don't know the term for spiritual perfection. And it's certainly not something you hear people talk about. Enlightenment, of course. But anywhere between where I am now and enlightenment, well, it's all just practice.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation.
How to distinguish within us what's soul, what's self, what's truth, what's ego, and how to live from that. There's many, many practices of this. I mean, this is really what the depth and breadth of the spiritual tradition is about. So in volumes of Vedas, in epics, I mean, in all of the works that you could call scripture, the core fundamental teaching, of course, is you are soul. You are not body. You are soul. The rest is illusion. But even that, it's not you are soul, separate soul. It's actually there is just soul. So it's not, well, I'm a soul, not the body, and that soul is separate from your soul. I mean, so on the most outer layer, the most superficial layer of truth, what in many cases they call illusion, but we'll just call it our most outer layer of truth. I'm this body. I go a step deeper into truth. I'm not the body, I'm the soul, the individual soul, what we call jivatma. But there's actually another layer to go, in which there's nothing but soul. And so in fact, interestingly, when we go through the question of God and gods, and in Hinduism, is it a polytheistic tradition of many gods? And then of course we say, no, of course not, it's a monotheistic tradition. There's only one God. But even a step deeper than that is, there's nothing but God. So it's not even a matter of just there is one God, and that one God is, you know, somewhere, but there's actually nothing but God. So the ultimate truth is not just I'm not this body, I'm my individual soul, but even a step beyond that, which is this soul isn't even individual. There's a beautiful quotation by Thich Nhat Hanh, the beautiful Buddhist sage, who says, enlightenment is when the wave realizes it's the ocean. Enlightenment is when the wave realizes it's the ocean. So if you think of an ocean as infinite, absolutely infinite, well, what we are the wave forms. The most out superficial level is body, individual form. Yeah, this one's tall, this one's short, this one's long, this one was a good, good one to surf on, this one not such a good one to surf on. But ultimately, the truth is, those waveforms, it's not that they're an illusion. I mean, yes, ocean goes up, but they're not the highest truth. The highest truth is just ocean. Take a dropper into any wave, fill it full of wave water. Look at that wave water under the microscope, and what do you see? Ocean. So the truth of who I am is soul, is divine, thank you, is God. And the way to distinguish the rest from it, again, there's a lot of ways. I would say the simplest and broadest way is any impulse that we have, instinct we have, thought we have, feeling we have, that separates us in any way, that objectifies people, things, ourselves,
is going to come from the ego. Because it's the ego that is attached to this body, this mind, this history, this personality, that's separate from that body, that history, that personality. So anything that comes into your mind that's rooted in separation, so lust, greed, anger, right? These things are rooted in separation. I am angry at you. Well, there could be nothing that separates us even more than that. Greed, I need more. Well, that means I'm over here as this separate being and I'm somehow lacking in something. So I need to grab more of something over there that is separate from me, bring it closer to me. So I'm separate. Lust. This being is an object that's going to bring me pleasure. We're separate. I need you, this form, to bring pleasure to this form. Separation. So that's one way. Anything that's rooted in separation, you can be pretty sure is not coming from the soul. Anything that's rooted in oneness is coming from that place. There's the beautiful, beautiful meditation practice of Neti Neti, which is a really traditional practice that's taught of literally sitting and going layer by layer and saying, I am not my sorry. Well, okay, there's nobody who's going to argue with that. We can all get into that one. And then, well, I'm not my skin. A step deeper, I'm not my bones. A step deeper, I'm not my blood. And any time that you have any question about it, well, you think about it. So if I say, well, I'm not my blood, and if some voice in me says, am I, really? Well, you say, well, of course. I mean, I could donate a pint of blood, and I haven't lost some of myself. I could get a blood transfusion. I haven't become someone else. My blood cells regenerate. Myself is still here. You go deeper and deeper. I'm not my organs. I'm not this. I'm not that. And then ultimately you get even to things like, I'm not my thoughts. And again, the reason that we know that is very clear scientifically. If I were my thoughts, well, even in that split moment between thoughts, I would cease to exist. And if I ceased to exist, who was the one who was going to have the next thought? I'm not my mind. We understand how it works, chemical, electrical, patterns. Again, for me, science plays a great role here because what we know neurologically is that if you take a probe and you stimulate different areas of the brain, you actually can get people, and they do this, they've done all of this research, you can actually get people to have different emotions. So you can stimulate one part of the brain and suddenly make somebody giggle, and stimulate a different part of the brain and make them really angry, and stimulate somewhere else and make them sexually excited, and stimulate somewhere else and make them all weepy. And so when you read studies and you learn that, you realize, well, my God, I mean, how many of us, when we're weepy, we feel like, oh, like that is me. This is my sadness. You know, I am distressed. Or when we're angry, I am, and we feel it in the core of our being. And then the minute that you realize that some guy with a metal probe can make you angry, suddenly it takes that weight out of it, becomes a little bit less me, and a little bit more a pattern of neural activity. But also, again, we realize I'm not my emotions, because in between my emotions, I would cease to exist then. And if I cease to exist, Well, who's the one who's going to be weepy? I mean, if after I was done being angry, I disappeared, well, so who was going to be weepy next week? So we go through this item by item. And the other, of course, even more obvious way of doing it is saying, well, if we say my thoughts, they're not me. Anytime we're using a possessive pronoun, it's mine. I own it. It belongs to me. Which, of course, by semantic definition means it's not me. If it belongs to me, it can't be me. And the more that we can focus on this and just keep doing these meditations, both in our eyes closed, darkened room meditation time, but also in our life, when we feel emotions come up, can you ground yourself deeply in the breath and reconnect? Reconnect back to the self, back to the soul.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Feel that divinity. I see that divinity here in India, and then I go back home and it's much harder. This is something that everyone struggles with. Everyone struggles with it, so don't feel alone. What's important to remember is that the divinity, of course, is everywhere. We know it's everywhere. But there's an environment here in India that's much more conducive to seeing it. It's like when you think about being back in university, in your college dorm. Well, so you've got your textbook to study from. Brain is yours, book is yours, eyes are yours. But studying in the library, where everybody else is studying and the whole environment is studying and it's very, very quiet, you're able to learn and absorb much quicker, much more easily, and it sticks with you longer. Take the same book, your same brain, your same eyes, and try to do it sitting at the table in the dining hall of your dorm room, or even sitting in your dorm room with the noise and with the music and with your roommates and with people running up and down the halls, yelling and screaming and dancing and drunk and who knows what else. Theoretically, you should still be able to do it, right? The book is there, your eyes are there, your brain is there. But anybody who's lived in a college dorm and who wants to really study knows the only way to really study is to go to the library. Because there's too much chaos going on in the dorm, too many distractions. And in the same way, in India, what you've got is a culture that is dedicated to, focused on this divinity. And that doesn't mean everybody is. Doesn't mean every single person you meet in the market is going to be on a spiritual path. But what you've got is thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years of tradition. So it's not just about the 3 or 4 or 10 people you're interacting with right now. It's about what's in the air. What's in the atmosphere? What are the energetic frequency vibrations here? So whereas in your college dorm, the energetic frequency is let's go out and dance and, you know, get drunk. In the library, the energetic frequency is sit down and study. So when you go back, what you've got is going back into cultures where literally the collective frequency is one that's much more materialistic. It's not a matter of bad or good. It's just a matter of spirit and matter. Here, there tends to be a lot more focus on the spirit. There tends to be a lot more focus on the matter. So it's not so much your soul and your spirit, but it's your waistline, your bust line, your jewelry, your house, your car. And so naturally that impacts us. And don't feel badly for that. We're energetic beings and we tend to pick up wherever we are. But what's important to remember is that we also, as I always say, we're energetic transmitters too. And so rather than going back and feeling just like this victim sponge that just soaks up materialism and, you know, you just long to be back in India, rather than that, see whether you can't turn on the energetic transmitter part. Because while you're here, if you're able to feel that connection and you're able to see that divinity, you have it in you. That's now part of you. And that's going back with you. And so try to be an energetic transmitter so that even if you're surrounded by an emphasis on matter, you're able to transmit an energy that says spirit, 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 spirit. And what's really important also is the power of association, what we call satsang or a sangha. You need to have people who are also committed to spirit, 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 spirit. And it doesn't mean that you don't wear nice clothes and wear jewelry, and it doesn't mean you don't like to go dancing, and it doesn't mean that you don't, you know, have jobs and make a living. But it just means that your focus, the way that you're seeing the world, is focused on seeing divinity, focused on seeing spirit. And even if you've got just 2 or 3 friends, 2 or 3 people with whom you can connect, that's enough. Even 1 is enough. But if you've got 2 or 3, it's somewhat easier. And spend as much time together as you can. Because together, then what you're going to build up is a very, very powerful frequency. And remember, of course, that the greatest tool and the greatest key is you. As Pooja Swamiji always says, you are the master key. And you're taking that with you. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. So go back, you'll start, then you'll lose it, then you start, then you lose it, then you start. It's like meditation. Bring the mind back, it wanders, bring it back, it wanders, bring it back. It's the same thing. You're seeing the divinity, you get lost. You're seeing the divinity, you get lost. Just keep bringing it back. And of course, feel free to keep coming back here and recharging your batteries. It's really what it's like. Like, it just recharges us. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.